This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having seven kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Taking a walk.
Music has its demands as well. When we're a musician, sometimes we're a bit like an actor and we have to be what the music needs us to be sometimes. We have to draw on all our temperamental possibilities, I think, to being able to realise the music. So there's that as well. There's who we really are and who we are for the music, and there's many levels.
Welcome to the Taking a Walk podcast, where your host, Buzz Knight, features guests that share their stories and speak of their love of music. On this episode, we explore the world of chamber music with a man who has had a remarkable career as a conductor, a cellist, and a keyboardist. The H&H Society was founded in 1815, and Jonathan, at the age of 44, is one of their youngest artistic directors in history. The new season of H&H is called What's Old is New Again. Let's join Buzz and Jonathan in Boston on Taking a Walk.
Well, Jonathan, thanks for having me here. Can you describe what is on this wall here first, Jonathan?
Well, there's a lot of music there. That's all nicely organized. Look, there's Johann Sebastian Bach's Magnificat, Mass in G minor. There's a tons. I won't read out all the names, but there's a lot of repertoire and music that the organization has been performing for years here, I'd imagine. Yeah.
Is it someone's responsibility to put these in files here?
Oh, yeah, I would imagine, absolutely. Yeah. We have to keep them nicely ordered. A lot of sheet music. You know, musicians, we write our bowings and markings in there, and so there's a lot of history in those pages, yeah.
Well, congratulations on the new appointment as the artistic director. Tell me how it feels. How excited are you?
I'm very excited. It feels great. It's a wonderful chance to do really great music here in Boston with fantastic musicians, and I'm thrilled to be here.
And how about just being in Boston in general? How does that feel?
Yeah, it's a fantastic place. I feel a lot of energy here, you know. I don't know if you feel that too, but it feels to me that there's a lot of love and love for music, a lot of energy, a lot of culture here. It's an exciting place.
It is. I always feel that way coming into the city. I live out in the suburbs, but coming to Boston is always a true joy, and getting to meet you is a joy. Since it's called Taking a Walk, do you like taking walks in cities like Boston?
I do. I like walking a lot. I often walk to rehearsals and, you know, especially if it's a nice day like today with the sun shining, it's a pleasure. I like hiking as well, actually. I do quite a lot of that. Something very very healthy and lovely to be outdoors, I think.
And when you're in the midst of a long day of rehearsals, is it a welcome moment to just go clear your head and take a walk?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I, you know, being in one room all day working, it's nice to get out, isn't it, and go and find a spot of lunch, a nice coffee, walk around a little bit. Absolutely.
So talk specifically about some of your background that you think has essentially really prepared you for this new work you'll be part of.
Yeah, well, I was a cellist to start off with. Well, actually, that's not entirely true. I was a pianist. I started piano when I was very little, and then I got into the cello when I was about aged 8. And I, you know, I did a lot of chamber music. I think that helped prepare me a lot, because I think Baroque music is a lot about chamber music. So I played in string quartets, and I used to go on summer courses as a kid, to chamber music courses, you know, playing chamber music. And yeah, so I found Baroque music a little bit later. When I was at Cambridge, I went to university and I studied music there. And I got into the, you know, with those beautiful chapel choirs and the music there. I used to enjoy putting things together, and I had lots of friends who were singers and instrumentalists, and I always sort of, you know, found a nice piece of music from the library, something a bit interesting, and said, hey, wonder what this sounds like, let's get together and play it. So I was always fascinated with the idea of just bringing people together to play music that we didn't know, and that was always my sort of driving motivation, really, yeah.
And is it still something that you have the same passion as to when you started?
Absolutely. I always love discovering new music. And you know, there's so much music. It's almost like you'll never run out. There's in the past, you know, there's music from everywhere. And that's one of the great pleasures about music, really. It's sort of it's never-ending possibilities and new combinations of infinite combinations of notes to put together, and you know, each time we make it, we make it anew with different people and you make a note and then it disappears and it's gone forever, and you then get together and do it again. That's the great thing about music, isn't it?
So is there going to be a particular theme to this new season?
Yeah, well, you know, the I think there's we very much think that what is old is new again, and that's a nice I guess summary of what music's all about, really, and especially Baroque music, because it is new again. We pick up the score, and we reinvent it, and that's happening all the time. That's one of the pleasures of doing this kind of great music.
So what are typical days like leading up to when you will be opening?
So this week's going to be very busy. We're opening with Israel and Egypt by Handel on Friday and Sunday, first of the new season. And we'll be rehearsing frenetically all week, actually, which is great. This is really diving into this fantastic, monumental piece of Handel. The chorus yesterday, we met them for the first time in this piece. They're sounding absolutely fabulous. So we'll meet the orchestra today, and we'll gradually put it together over the week. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
How long are the rehearsals?
3 hours generally per rehearsal, and then we do like two or three of them sometimes a day. And you know, I'm going around working. You know, we'll put it together. We'll work the chorus separately, and we'll look over things. This sort of little. All the details about how to, you know, where we're putting the consonants, and ideas about the music specifically related to the chorus. And then today I'll take the orchestra by itself, and just, you know, we'll get to know the music and look at what concerns the orchestra. And then tomorrow and the next days we'll start putting it all together, and it just sort of grows bigger and bigger, and we sort of zone out, you know, just thinking musically, less about details and more about the big picture as it grows and grows into the performance, I think.
Is there a little chaos in the process at all?
Well, little chaos never hurts. It's good. I mean, you know, it's good to be creative, and I suppose creativity is where chaos lives. But I try to be as planned as I can, especially when you're organizing people's times, you know, because you have to, it would be a little too chaotic to be saying, let's rehearse this, and then without the right number of people there or things like that. So I try to be as organized as I can be. Yeah.
Do you have somebody that's the equivalent of a chief of staff of the whole operation that assists you, or is it just you bringing everybody along?
No, I mean, there's a huge amount of organization work that goes into this. Organization's very lucky to have Ira working, looking after all the musicians and organizing that. And, you know, and musically, I'm there running the rehearsals. So yeah.
I worked for somebody that, as I was managing radio stations and on-air talent, who suggested to me that managing talent is similar to conducting an orchestra and having the players in the orchestra play the notes that I'm asking them to play. I wanted to get your take on that in terms of what's important to be that leader, that director, and understanding the temperament of people and how you finesse that.
Yeah, I mean, there is a, I think there's a great similarity. Being a conductor, it's actually sort of being a leader of them. I mean, you know, if you think of that in terms of in a business or something, it's something similar. It's the same sort of, you want to bring the best out of the people that are in front of you, and you want to enable people to really have the chance to invest their personality, their experience, their skills, and you want to create an environment and condition where people are happy to give their best, you know, and I think that's what is important for a conductor to bring out of musicians, I think, you know.
Is there some psychology involved?
I'm sure there is with everything in life, no? I mean, yeah, a little bit. I like to, you know, think a lot about people's temperaments and how we can, you know, get the music sounding, because music has its demands as well. When we're a musician, sometimes we're a bit like an actor, and we have to be what the music needs us to be sometimes. We have to draw on all our temperamental possibilities, I think, to being able to realize the music. So there's that as well. There's who we really are and who we are for the music, and, you know, there's many levels.
What does it mean to you when you think of the historical perspective here of the society and its history? What does all that mean to you in terms of how you're going to guide it moving forward?
Yeah, it's an immense, I suppose it's humbling. You know, this organization is an illustrious organization over many years. It's done a lot of great work, great music, and I feel like I'm a part of the story now. You know, it's a little chapter in the story of H&H, and I'm keen to to respond to what needs to happen today, and I feel very very privileged and lucky to be able to be involved.
So when you go through a performance, is there a post-mortem after, where you sort of look and say, hey, everybody, we did this brilliantly. We need to work on this point.
Well, we often have two performances during a week, and there's a little tiny rehearsal before the second one. So sometimes after the first one, if there are items... I will go away after and sort of get the score out again the next day and try and think over, you know, how can I improve what was good, what could be better? Always, you know. And the second performance is... It's interesting, actually. Second performances are often very different to first performances. I found that a lot in the opera sometimes. Because, you know, people, as we were talking about psychology, people often have achieved a rather great thing on their first performance, and, you know, the energy is often different on the second one. Maybe it's a little bit wiser, you never know. But maybe less energy, but a bit wiser. And so there are challenges to a second performance. It's interesting, yeah.
Who are some of the leaders in your career that have shaped you and really influenced you?
Yeah, I was lucky to work as a young assistant conductor with William Christie for a long time, four or five years actually, in France with his organisation Les Arts Florissants. And I learnt a great deal from Bill. It was a very exciting time, you know. I got to watch things close up, and I was lucky to have a responsibility. He gave me a lot of responsibility, you know, go and rehearse this and go and sort things out with these singers. And it's often difficult, I think, as a conductor. I mean, people train as conductors, you know, now in music colleges and things, and it's very difficult to get. You have to have pilot hours, you know. It's like, you know, you have to actually learn to fly the real plane. Simulators are not. They can be useful, but being with people and having the chance to do that is extraordinarily valuable for a musician. I was very lucky with Bill because he gave me a lot of time with the orchestra, a lot of responsibilities to undertake, and it was, you know, it's a formative time for me.
Is that the biggest thing that he taught you, that bit of that freedom that he gave you?
Just being part of that musical community that was regularly doing wonderful music and big operas and staged operas and things with singers and orchestras and chamber music and all sorts of things. Just being part of it and sitting in on rehearsals and then taking rehearsals and, you know, being part of the hustle and bustle. I got to see what does it take to make a schedule. You know, what do directors, how do they need to collaborate with conductors? What do singers need? What kind of, you know, it's ornamentations, all the preparations, and how do they go about experiencing that and what's important to them, you know, kind of emotionally as well, how does it feel? And it's very important, that. Yeah.
So is there an element of balancing the historical perspective of the society with also bringing new audiences into the joy of the work? I mean, is there a balancing act with that?
Well, you know what we said about our sort of new season of what's old is new again. I don't think of it as doing old music. I mean, you know, it's like saying that somehow Shakespeare or Charles Dickens or some kind of any book not written right today is somehow irrelevant to. But actually, you know, music and art is a collection of human experience over time, and I think there's a lot to learn, especially with music that we reinvent it, you know. So it is new, and I don't think we have to apologise to audiences for that. I think often people come because of that. That's my view, and I think if there was a message, because, you know, I'm very keen on accessibility. I love that we work hard at H&H for that, and it's important to invite, to say, this is music for the world, you know, and we want you to have the chance to come and hear it. I think that's so, and, you know, and it is extraordinarily relevant in the way that any kind of art that encapsulates the human condition over time has a lot to teach us and to invigorate and to kind of touch the heart and give us hope and joy, you know.
There is a part of the society that does this great work with young folks.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
From 2 to 12, for sure, right? I mean, it's really bringing them sort of into the fold early. Yeah. Talk about how joyful that is for you.
That's amazing to see that, and I think it's a vital part of the H&H mission, the education, giving young people the chance to read music, to experience music together. I think it can change the life. I mean, you know, I think it's a wonderful thing to do. And it's our future audiences, our future musicians too, you know. So, but it brings people all sorts of great benefits for children. You know, my son himself does a lot of singing, and I saw when he started doing that a transformation actually in his personality, his ability to concentrate, his kind of joy and energy. You always look forward so much to singing in the choirs, and I think it's a really great opportunity. You know.
We produced this other podcast. It's called Music Saved Me, and it's about the healing power of music from musicians' standpoint and from some of their fans. Do you think music and the music that you are part of has therapeutic healing power?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that, actually. It really does, you know. It's an extension of our spirits, of our souls somehow, and it's a way of sharing that together and over time as well, you know. It's like you can connect with people in different places, you can cross boundaries, you know, you can cross time spans, countries, experiences, and you can share humanity. I think that's what music's all about, and you see the power of it in the concert halls. You see it at concert. You just turn around and I look, see the audience, and I see someone in row whatever who's have a giant grin on their face, a lovely smile, and eyes sparkling, and they've really taken in that piece of music, and it's made a difference. You know, that's lovely.
And does it feel different in a, let's just say, a post-pandemic world that people are even more joyful to experience your
work? I certainly felt that, actually, yeah, especially when things came back again. There was a real sort of feeling of absolute relief, actually, that we can get back to kind of living a more normal type of life. And I think it's like a plant, isn't it? If you stop giving it water, it sort of shrivels up, and that's how I felt a little bit when everything was isolated. I mean, of course, it was necessary, but it's nice to get back to things. It felt like a re-flourishing, actually. Yeah.
Well, lastly, I want to ask, are there any guilty pleasures musically that someone might be surprised that you enjoy knowing the disciplines of your work on a regular basis?
It's a very hard question to answer because I don't feel particularly guilty. I mean, you know, no, I'm quite sort of open, and I love listening to all sorts of different things. Not that I necessarily know very much about the things, but, you know, I'm not sure. You can enjoy music without knowing lots of things about it. But I certainly, with my son now listening to all sorts of things, which I've got no idea who. So, you know, no, I've tried, yeah, tried to remain open-minded and listen to it as much as I can. Yeah, is that guilty?
With curiosity? No, it's just honest.
Yeah, right.
You don't close your ears to anything.
No, in general, I think if I'm. Maybe I still feel guilty about this. Things that are extremely loud tend to... But maybe that's because I became attuned to working, you know, with instruments that aren't sort of magnified by electric amplifiers. So sometimes, especially if I go into a nightclub or a bar and then there's live music, I sometimes really think, that's fantastic, it's so exciting, it's so loud! And I sort of, you know, so it takes a bit of getting used to for me. Maybe that's where I feel the most guilty.
Thank you for being on, and congratulations.
Thank you.
It's an honor to meet you.
Thank you. You too, Buzz. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Taking a Walk. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends. You can find this podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get podcasts.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases, and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Do you love fashion? Do you love getting compliments on how well you're dressed? Are you always seeking the latest trends? Then we're talking to you. BostonProper.com is your fashion destination and the only place to go for all those nods, head turns, and new styles. No matter the day, season, or occasion, Boston Proper has what you're looking for. Sophisticated, confident clothing designed to flatter and get noticed. So visit BostonProper.com now and start creating your perfect wardrobe. Boston Proper. Wear it like no one else.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.